VGMP.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of VGMP Retro, where we release classic episodes of the video game movie podcast with a slight touch-up, a slight coat of paint to try and make them a bit more palatable for you modern audiences. Today, we're talking about indie comedy, in air quotes, Noobs, featuring none other than Jay from Jay and Silent Bob.
Yep.
Our favourite recurring character, Armagregan.
Yeah, Armagregan.
Armagregan.
This was his first appearance on our show, but he had previously been in a film called Joysticks, which we covered in season three.
But the Armagregan phrase has become a recurring line on the show.
He's the best person in the film.
Lynn Shay is in this. Casper Van Dien is in this.
Zelda Williams, the son of Robin Williams'
daughter is in this. And involvement from Cliff Brzezinski, the former head of the Gears of War franchise.
Yes, the creator of the Gears of War franchise. Yeah,
what could possibly go wrong? Stay tuned to find out.
If you want to discuss this film with us, you can join us on our Discord. Just go to www.vgmovie.co.uk. And all of the references will also be on a blog post on that website, so feel free to click on that and then come into the Discord and give us a chat with your views on this film, whether you've seen it, whether you're not. And it should be, I believe, available to watch for free on YouTube. So if you haven't seen it yet and you want to give it a watch, feel free to do so and then join the Discord to let us know what you think. We'll catch you after the film.
Everybody, and welcome back to the Video Game Movie Podcast with myself, Rory Jocelyn of Cyberpunk Studios, and I'm joined as per usual by Jamie Evans of Impala Films. Say hello, Jamie.
Heidi, hi.
If you enjoy the show's content that we do, please follow us on Twitter. You can catch me at Cyberpunk Film, and you can catch me at Cyberpunk Film on Facebook. And follow us on all of our social medias. You can chase us up on Spotify, you can chase us up on Google Music, Apple Music, and basically a myriad of other places. Also, please feel free to join us on our Discord channel that we've now got for this series.
Yes, you're right, we need to start promoting that.
We need to start promoting the Discord. It's quite new, so get on board. And we'll keep you updated via that chat, as well as you can have a one-on-one chat with us, and we don't mind discussing films, ideas and things like that while we're on there. Today's episode, let's cut away from all the pretense of what it may be. It's a little known film called Noobs, N-O-O-B-Z, which is a 2012 movie, written, directed and starring Blake Freeman. Obviously, we all remember Blake Freeman.
Charisma vacuum Blake Freeman.
That's the one. However, there are a couple of names on here that you might be more au fait with. Jason Mewes is kind of the second lead. Now, anyone who knows of Jason Mewes will probably know him more as Jay from Jay and Silent Bob.
I think that's all he's been in, isn't it? I can't think of anything else he's been in.
Pretty much. He's one of the biggest stars. However, the only other one who's kind of massive, I'd say, is Casper Van Dien, who's not in it very much, but he is in the film.
Massive.
Compared to Blake Freeman.
I tell you what's funny. Obviously, not at the time this was released, but Lynn Shay is in this movie. And I guarantee you, if this had came out this year, Lynn Shay would be one of the names on the top of the box.
Which one was Lynn Shay?
So she's the old lady who's married to Casper Van Dien.
Ah, yes.
She has had quite a career resurgence in the last few years since playing the lead in the Insidious series of movies.
Right.
She was in the latest version of The Grudge. She's kind of
so she's had a revival, basically.
Yeah,
a career, basically.
She's kind of become a horror icon in the last few years.
Cool. For those who are fans of some sort of classic actors, Robin Williams' daughter, Zelda Williams, is in this. And she does all right, but obviously it's not really the role doesn't really showcase her talents either as an actress or as a comedian. Yeah. It's just another
She's a generic hipster girl.
However, she is in it, so I thought that would be interesting, because myself, that was sort of the more interesting part for me. Mm. I haven't watched an awful lot of Starship Troopers to something like, oh, Casper Van Dien, and I'm not really a big fan of Jay and Silent Bob, so that didn't do it for me. But seeing Zelda Williams was in this, I was like, oh, I wonder what her career's like and what's going on with that. So that was an interest for me.
Shall we quickly talk about the mystery of this cover art?
And the fact
that there is an actress on this cover art who, we have literally just watched this movie, literally 30 seconds ago.
And there's a model, the only female on the front cover, And I don't think she was in the film.
It's definitely not Zelda Williams.
No.
Yeah, you're right. I don't think she was in the film because she doesn't look... You suggested she might be Blake Freeman's girlfriend from the beginning.
Yeah, it's the only...
Her facial shape is completely wrong.
Yeah, you're right.
I think she might be someone who was cut from the film.
Quite possibly. And the thing is, they did have outtakes at the end, but she wasn't in any of them.
I'm not even lying. She's in a deliberately low-cut top, and she has a rather large chest. It could be as cynical as they've just gone, fuck, we need some boobs on this cover so people will buy it.
Yeah, it's true. Now, you'll like this about the disc, Jamie. So I've got the Blu-ray. I have to import it from Germany because this is only available on Blu-ray in Germany.
Shouldn't be available on Blu-ray at all.
So don't say that I don't put the effort in, Jamie. We imported this especially.
If you remember, a couple episodes ago, I forget which one exactly, I actually commended you on how much effort you put into pointless things. So.
That is true. So if you'll take note of this wonderful disc arrangement, it says knobs because the middle O is taken up by the circle in the middle of the disc where the hole is.
I think it's meant to be that is the second O.
Yeah, but then it's just N-O-B-Z. It's knobs.
No, but that's the second O.
No, but it doesn't... They've cut the white bit around it, so it just looks like knobs.
I mean, yeah, this film is... To be fair, you could call this film that because it is basically just these characters dicking around for 90 minutes.
Absolutely.
What was the runtime on this bad boy?
The runtime was roughly 100 minutes.
Can I tell you how long it felt like? I felt like we started watching this about 6 a.m. this morning.
It felt like
and it's now 4 p.m.
Yep. So I'm going to read just the sort of shorthand a little bit, the basic premise from the back of the box.
Go ahead.
Immobilienmakler Cody, der gerade geführte Werde.
Damn it!
Andy is ein selbst ernannter Psychopath, gay oder auch nicht, Oliver.
Do we have any listeners in Germany?
No.
Then why are you reading in German?
Und der Schaustoff Junkie Hollywood sind der Rain Clan und eine Kaustroppe vor dem Herren.
Okay, I walked right into that one. That's my fault.
I did tell you it was a German
cover.
You did,
and I didn't listen.
And there is no English. Mit Casper Van Dien und Jason Mewes. Well, there is a review on here from GameRadar.de, D for Deutschland being the German Games Radar. Der Nerdfilm des Jahres. Which means basically the nerd film of the year.
Yeah, I gathered that.
I mean, I can't remember any other nerd films in 2012, so he might be right, but because it's the only one. But
was Scott Pilgrim versus the World 2012?
Oh, actually, that's a good point. It was 2009, Scott Pilgrim.
Really?
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah, it was early. Well, earlier.
Oh, that makes sense, because I watched it while I was at uni.
Yeah.
And I went to uni in 2010.
So, yeah, I don't know. I'd have to double check what other potential games there were in 2012, but I can't believe that this was... The only way this was the best is if it was the only one.
So basically, this movie is ostensibly the main character is Blake Freeman's character, who was so bland I've already forgotten his name.
Cody.
I wrote
that one down.
Well done.
Don't patronise me.
He is a generic. Aside from being a vacuum of charisma, he is a generic loser. He works for a real estate company, but he doesn't care about his job, so he half-asses it, which leads to him getting sacked. He's blown. We come to learn that that's like the fifth job he's been sacked from. Mm-hmm. And he's, you know, painted the car with his face, to quote Build a Brand.
Yep.
And then he's... I'm going to be honest here, as crude as this may be, because, you know, life's about more than just looks and stuff. His girlfriend, who is far too attractive...
Wife, apparently.
His wife, sorry, who's far too hot for him, comes in and he's playing games at 3 p.m. And quite rightly, this woman chews him out and divorces him. Yeah. Now, let's just put a pause here for a minute to tell you about this lady's costume.
Yes, I've noted that here as well. Yeah. Yep.
So she's wearing one of these standard, like, Primark-style tank tops that loads of girls wear.
Yeah, just a basic grey tank top. But it's not low-cut, but it's got a cut that would show some... cleavage.
Yeah, but they have visibly, like, it's not even hidden, they have visibly...
And it's not well done.
No, visibly with scissors have cut down the centre so that more of her cleavage, more of her spillage is...
I don't want that to be a permanent fixture.
Call back to Sega Hard Girls, episode 3. Her boobs are out, basically. I'm a fan of boobs, but I don't need you to be obnoxiously cutting women's costumes in half
and it was very,
so that they could see them.
There was no attempt to sew. Like, it wasn't like they cut it with scissors and then they'd
hemmed it
and stitched it round so it looked normal. It wasn't at all. It was literally like you could see the rips where the scissors hadn't done a good cutting job.
As if they'd literally done it
on the day.
2 minutes before shooting the scene.
Yeah.
Anyway, he is part of a gamer group called Rain. That's their clan name.
Yeah. Rain is in, like, to conquer, not rain is in water.
Which also consists of Jason Mewes's character, known as Predatored on the...
Yes.
His gamertag is Predatored.
Yep.
Cody's gamertag is Rumpel Foreskin.
Yep. I don't know
The worst one is, who's the character everyone thinks is gay? Oliver,
Matt's
was it?
Right. Oh, sorry, yes, Oliver.
So Oliver is a character who is a little bit effeminate, and as such, because this is a 2012 movie, the rest of the characters spend the whole film giving him shit for being gay. He spends the whole film denying that he's gay, but his username in the clan... And doesn't this just lead to all the yucks, is Fraggot.
Yes, so, yeah.
Be careful there before you cancel me.
Frag.
I did not...
Frag.
Fraggot. Make sure you get that R in there.
Yes.
But my God. Anyway, the fourth and final person of their team is a guy called Hollywood.
Yes.
Who they never see on their webcam.
But he has a picture of Casper Van Dien and pretends that he is Casper Van Dien.
Yeah. Well, for all intents and purposes, is Casper Van Dien.
You can tell by his voice it's not Casper Van Dien.
Then...
They don't even believe it's Casper Van Dien themselves.
Now, this is where the film then gets more complicated than it should be. Because I assume this film was also written by Blake Freeman?
Yes. So, let me just give you a rundown on that. Screenplay by Blake Freeman and Marvin Wilson with two L's. There was 7 producers on this film.
Well, we'll get
including
to that.
Blake Freeman as one of those, and directed by Blake Freeman, and starring Blake Freeman. He wrote the theme tune, sung the theme tune.
This is a vanity. Let's be clear. It becomes clear that this is a vanity project.
Yeah, to the point where the script ends up destroying itself.
Yeah. So this is what I'm about to get into.
Yeah.
We then start. So basically, there are too many storylines happening in this film. So you think your main arc here is going to be about Blake Freeman learning not to be a loser.
Yeah.
We're then introduced to the clan's arch-enemy clan, who are called the Black Assassins.
Yeah, most of what we see until the very end
is just
one black kid with,
With
a really stereotypical, a hairpin.
Afro-comb thing.
Yeah, stuck in his hair the whole time.
Was his username Yo Mama?
I think it was Yo Mama. Yeah.
So you think, oh well, they're obviously going to be the, you know, this is the joke because the film's called Noobs. They're these obnoxious kids. You think it's going to be like an older v young thing because we then get introduced to what is clearly meant to be a villain, a character called Greg, who is frozen in the 1980s. He literally has a mullet. Everything he loves is from the 80s. He still uses a cassette player.
He was kind of known as a Frogger champion, but he's got, a score to settle or something, but it's never mentioned as to, whether he lost something or what the score was he wanted to settle.
Yeah.
He just, for some reason, has decided this is his year to come back and settle the score on Frogger.
Yeah. Fun fact for Supernatural fans, his advisor, who
he's
is
only in one scene,
is played by Richard Speight Jr., who Supernatural fans will know as Gabriel from... Supernatural. Fun
I'm glad
fact.
You mentioned Gabriel, because they keep on thinking that Oliver's character is gay.
My God.
Terrible pun time.
No.
Oh, come on, it's not as bad as Predatored.
No, I know. And basically, all of these characters are all going to a tournament for the game Gears of War 3, which is featured heavily throughout this movie.
Yes.
We'll get there.
Yes. I'll come to the references. There's a lot of them, but most, the vast majority of them are Gears of War 3.
But for some reason, this game tournament... Now, I don't...
Game turd? That was a slip of the tongue.
Yeah, it was. I've never been to a games tournament, so I don't know. Please correct me. A tournament for Gears of War 3, for reasons I cannot figure out, also has a Frogger tournament happening as a side thing.
Yes.
Now, I would get it if it was a Gears of War tournament.
If it was just a general tournament.
And then a smaller modern game as a side tournament,
sure.
Like Forza or something.
Yeah.
But what audience do you think you're capturing having a Gears of War 3 tournament and a Frogger tournament. Anyway, point is, Armageddon, as he's known.
As he calls himself. No one else calls him.
Yeah, he's going to this tournament as well, and he has a speech about how modern console gamers, you know, are weak and lazy and feckless, and arcade gaming's what real men do. And this is the thing with the title of film Noobs, and the fact you've got three different teams in three different age brackets, you think the theme of the film is going to be this generational conflict.
Which would have been a better story by a long margin.
But there's another story set up, because Jason Mewes' character is also madly in love with a lady from another team, which is Zelda Williams' character. Yeah. Name?
Ricky, but it only mentions it at the end.
No, they did say it earlier when he shows them the picture.
Just call it Zelda Williams.
But do you see what we're getting at already? There are too many storylines in the cooker, and a lot of these storylines get forgotten about for half the film.
Yeah.
And then at the end,
they all cancel
each other out, but we'll get there.
Yeah. So let's roll back a bit. So now we've got established kind of the ground rules of this storyline. There's a few things that I wanted to note. So Cody's wife, the one with the low-cut top, when she leaves him, they're all listening over their headpieces because they're currently having a death match online.
Yeah. And it's meant to be funny that they're overhearing all this.
It's terrible that you have to say meant to be funny, but it is meant to be funny. It should have been funnier. She says to him that because he's being so lazy, she goes, I can't do this anymore. I found someone else, so I'm leaving. It's like, that's superfluous. Why does she need to have found someone else? Like, him being a bum and screwing her around is surely enough for her to leave without needing to go, by the way, I found another dick.
Is it a weak attempt to make him the good guy?
Fine. Like, I think it's unnecessary, but fine, I would have understood that. But again, like, if the idea was to set him up as that he's gotten complacent and procrastinating to the point where everyone's leaving him, then his story arc should have been, by the end, he finds redemption, and he's like, you know what, I do need to put effort in, I do need to improve my life. Not necessarily to win her back, but to get someone who would stick by him, and for him to actually stick by them.
For his own self-fulfillment.
Yeah, but they continue that on into the start of the road trip, because there's a road trip to get to the tournament. They start that off through the road trip to the point where they get to a gas station. We'll come to the gas station in a minute. There's a sequence there where something happens, and then that seems to be the end of trying to give him any form of redemption. It's badly written and it doesn't work. But there's an attempt to, like, sort of have him consider having this epiphany to redeem himself. And then for the rest of the film,
he just becomes grumpy after that, doesn't he?
He just becomes a grumpy narcissist. And they even call him a narcissist. And then that's him. And he never advances from that point.
Yeah.
From that point on to the end of the film, he doesn't have any story arc.
And the gas station scene probably, potentially, could be the funniest scene in the film if you had an actor who had any ounce of comedic ability, i.e. not Blake Freeman.
It feels like we're slating on Blake Freeman. The thing is, it's possible he could have been a good actor if he wasn't also director, because there are some people that can't direct themselves. Because that's the awkward thing, is directing and acting in the same movie, you need to have a really strong idea of what you're doing, and really you need to have a lot more experience to trust yourself with that. Whereas otherwise you're going to end up missing on something. And let's be honest, the direction on this wasn't stellar, and it was very clear that some of it, certainly on directing himself, it was lackluster and missing. So it's possible Blake Freeman could pull a good performance, he just didn't. Either because of inability, or if it's not because of inability, because he overtaxed himself.
Yeah, he needs either a better cinematographer or one he has a better working relationship with. Because if what I've learned from my own personal experience, because I act and direct as well, and what I've learned from my own personal experience is if you're going to do that, you need either an assistant director or a DOP who you can trust to have a similar vision to you. Because some of the framing in some of these shots,
oh, it's terrible,
is on par with student movies.
There's some scenes where it sort of gets beyond that, but not by a large margin. You're never going to watch this and go, oh, it's like watching Blade Runner. You know, you're never going to be like,
the film's far too ugly for that.
Yeah, I don't understand why it's so ugly either.
Well, to be fair to this film, part of that is the fact that it's clearly a low-budget film. Mm. They clearly spent a lot of the money they did have getting Jason Mewes, Casper Van Dien, and Lin Shaye. And actually, John Greers, who plays Armageddon, is a fairly well-known actor as well.
Yeah.
They've obviously spent the money there.
Sure.
And it shows, because those people are the best actors in the film.
Yeah.
but it's partly as well either that they've overtaxed themselves or they've been unimaginative. The things that make this film look cheap is the lighting in every scene. Every scene is clear. It's very basic flat lighting.
Yep.
All the shots are not quite composed right.
No.
So they're ignoring the rule of thirds a lot. There's a scene with Zelda Williams where I even heard you say, oh, that's an ugly shot.
Yeah.
Where she's cramped over to the left side of the screen, yeah. But the entire right-hand side of the screen is just empty space.
Yeah.
There's nothing interesting happening there.
And she's so not even facing forward. She's facing to the left.
Yeah.
But she's
with her hair obscuring her face.
Yeah, it's a really badly considered shot.
Yeah.
And I don't know why they didn't catch that.
Yeah.
That stuff you can fix for free.
Yeah. There's no proper close-ups. I don't know if you noticed this.
Not real, genuine close-ups. No,
the closest they get is sort of mid-chest level.
Yeah, mid-close.
There's no proper, like, their face is filling the screen dramatic close-ups.
Well, there was nothing cinematic in the framing either. So
it's not a cinematic script, let's
be honest. No, but there's certain elements where you could use cinematic techniques to enhance a situation. So, not to get too ahead of myself, but in the tournament at the end, when certain things happen and certain people win or lose or die or not take the shot or whatever is happening in that scene, you could punctuate those shots with extreme close-ups where it's like, and you can see the sweat going down someone's face.
Or, that's what I would have done. Close-ups of the hands on the controllers.
Yeah, and you could get all the tension and you could really wring out a scene and get, you know, build that tension. There was no tension throughout this whole film. Mm. Because even though they had those elements in the story, every single shot was just kind of a relaxed, oh, I'll just watch you from over here and see how it goes.
There's no variance of pace either.
No.
The film is all one speed. There's never any urgency. The film just chugs on. And like I said, storylines get forgotten. Like, I literally forgot Armageddon was in the film for half of it. Because after his first scene, there's a huge gap where he doesn't appear again. And then he comes back and you're like, oh, this guy.
Yeah. So, after Cody's wife leaves him, Jason Mewes' character convinces Cody, or Blake Freeman, to come to the Gears tournament, even though he kind of doesn't want to. Now, I mentioned here, when we were talking about how ugly this film can be, Cody goes to meet Jason Mewes at his store, where he runs a chain of video game sales
websites.
Game stores. GameStop in America, yeah. And there's a point where there's a customer complaining, and there's just like a basic shot of the customer, and over the customer's shoulder, you can see Blake Freeman.
It's a pointless scene as well,
isn't
it?
It's a pointless scene. It adds nothing. But the other thing as well is that the camera focus, I can't tell if it's an autofocus or if it's a mistake by the focus puller.
Yes, but it goes out of focus several times.
Yeah, a few times. It's like it's struggling, which would normally suggest to me that it's an autofocus issue. But then I don't know if it is, because there is what seems to be a manual focus pull when it then focuses on Cody in the background.
Yeah.
Is the focus puller just buggering about?
Yeah.
I'm guessing they didn't have a dedicated focus puller. It's probably just a cinematographer holding the camera and doing the focus pulling simultaneously. It's just a really bad shot. Because actually that one's not so badly framed. It's just the focus isn't right. There's a comment about the fact that when they're at the tournament, Jason Mewes is going to meet up with Zelda Williams' character. And they've been apparently chatting for a long time, and this is stated, so this is a nice reference.
Holy crap, you got a picture of girl guns.
Don't be an asshole, her name is Ricky.
Oh my god, dude, you've been obsessed with this chick ever since Dreamcast.
For me, as a big Dreamcast fan, thank you. I just wish it was in a better film. But I do appreciate a good Dreamcast reference. Just like Sega Hard Girls was a great Dreamcast reference. And then the last part of that before the journey starts, Jason Mewes chats with Zelda Williams on Skype to agree to a date at the tournament. Cody picks up Jason Mewes in his car, which still has his face on the side. When Oliver comes out to meet them and get in the car for the journey, left lipstick on. He was in his room looking at his mirror going, I'm doing some weird...
Yeah, he's just overly, like dancing in front of his own mirror with lipstick on, isn't
he? Yeah, for no reason. He's not got any other makeup on. There's no suggestion as to that he's been doing anything. He's just got lipstick on randomly, so he's going, oh, you're gorgeous, and all this stuff, and dancing. When he realises that he's been honked down by their horn, he runs down, he's still got the lipstick on, and they have a laugh about that.
Yucking it up.
Yep, and the thing is I'll put here because lol gay. And the sad part is that this is a joke that is constant and consistent
throughout the film.
And it never pays off.
No.
I mean, for the amount of times they pull this joke, I mean, we complained about Stay Alive because in the unrated version, not the theatrical version you saw, there was Frankie Muniz's character who was like, oh, that wrist strap smells and is gay. And we were like, well, that's a stupid thing to say. And then it's brought up right near the end of the film. Oh, no, I'm not wearing this. It's gay. And then so you've got two references to that. It's like, oh, this is superfluous. It doesn't do anything. And it's not even funny anymore. I would even question whether it was really that funny at the time. Well, 6 years later, Noobs comes along and they take that from like 6 to 11. And it's just every 5 minutes, gay. Yeah, no, we understand you're gay, bro. Guys, find another angle. This character has no arc. Find something, give him something. Because actually, I think he was the best actor out of the four main characters. It's just he wasn't given anything to do with his part.
Fair enough, fair enough.
So, on the way to pick up Casper Van Dien, or Hollywood, they pull over to a petrol gas station, and Cody argues with a little girl, because he can't wait for her to finish pouring herself a coffee from the coffee machine. So he gives her
God forbid he should wait in line.
No, exactly. So he gives her a shitty remark, and she turns around and pulls, like, what you'd expect from a stereotype of an aggressive feminist.
I thought they were just trying to make her sound like she's a lot wiser than she is and more analytical.
Well, that's what they were doing.
She starts like psychoanalyzing him, doesn't she?
Yeah.
Where she's like, oh,
she's using words that a 12-year-old wouldn't.
Yeah. Which I think is supposed to be the joke, but it's just not funny.
No.
And then this grown ass man,
he has a revelation. That's the where he has the revelation. Oh, yeah. Like, oh, I am selfish. Oh, maybe I should improve.
It doesn't stop him being selfish.
No, and he never improves from here. And in fact, this is where they drop the storyline. This is the last you hear of it. But he's like, I have this revelation. So he goes, oh, can I have a cuddle? And she's like, yeah, why not?
He asks this 12-year-old girl. He's a stranger to her. Asks her for a hug in the middle of this store, and she does. Of course, that's the point. Her mum walks in. With a quick appearance from Austin Powers as Mindy Sterling.
Yep.
And of course she freaks out. She pepper sprays him.
Yes.
And then you get, here we go with another eye-rolly joke. The clerk at this gas station, who is of Middle Eastern descent.
Yeah, Middle Eastern / Indian.
Or Indian, yeah, that kind of thing. Decides to pull out his phone to call the police, and he goes, don't worry, I know how to get the police here quickly. And obviously, I'm not going to imitate his accent, but he obviously has an accent like that.
Yeah, yeah.
He rings the phone, they go, 911, what's your emergency? And he suddenly puts on a generic American accent and says something along the lines of, hi, I'm a white middle-class guy, and these people are robbing me. The joke obviously being, ha, 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 that white people are the only ones who get police assistance.
Mm.
It's a tired joke, it's a hackneyed joke, and to be honest, it's a little bit insensitive, given all of the problems that American police forces do have. It's documented that there is a problem in the American police force with them racially profiling people, things like that. It's like, that's not funny. That's
no,
quite serious.
And the thing is the problem with that is not a lack of turning up, it's turning up too aggressively.
Mm.
Maybe it was different in 2012, but it doesn't feel like it's long ago enough for it to be that forgettable.
It doesn't, but it is pretty much 10 years
It's 9 years old, I suppose. Yeah, I'll give you that. The only part of that scene that I found genuinely hilarious is after he leaves the store, and there's a really, I think, quite a good bit of slapstick, actually from Blake Freeman, so a pro here for me from Blake Freeman.
Yeah,
he tries to get in the car, he runs into the back of it, so Jason Mewes comes out of the other side, tries to pull him, opens up the passenger door, tries to throw him in, but he can't get him in, and he just slides out of the car again.
He slams the door on his foot, doesn't he?
Yeah,
first.
Yeah, and then so Oliver tries getting out the back, and, hey, do you need some help? Bats him in the head, knocks him into the front car door, and then it's just like, it's quite a good slapstick
like
moment. And
yeah, I'll admit, it was one of the only genuine laughs in the film.
Yeah, I was like, actually, that's a clever piece of slapstick, if only they'd done more of it. If they'd done more slapstick, it would have been a funnier film all round, because they were trying to do wit, and they didn't have the intelligence for it.
See you after the break.
So they drive up to Hollywood's house, and Casper Van Dien is there washing his Porsche. And they're like, oh, wow, Hollywood is Casper Van Dien. That's incredible. So they go up and they're like, oh, dude, I can't believe it's you, you know, blah, blah, blah. Casper Van Dien's looking at them like they're freaks, and he doesn't know who they are. And when Oliver gets close, it's like, oh, dude, you look so good.
I just want to let you know real quick, you are even more handsome in real life.
All right, look, I got a standing restraining order against your kind, so back off.
Now, considering that there has been a constant homosexual profiling throughout this entire film, it's very clear that that's what that line refers to as well. I have a, keep the gaze away, which isn't funny. Maybe it was in 2012? Certainly not funny now. But here's the thing. Okay, so he's got a restraining order against the gays, right? And then at the end, when he walks off, Oliver says something else that's like, oh,
he says, you're aging really well.
You're aging really well. He goes, oh, thanks. Turns around, watches Oliver walk on, goes,
on a side note, I gotta tell you, you are aging just wonderfully.
Come on, Fraggot.
Pretty cute.
So why have you got restraining order against gay?
Internalized homophobia.
Misogyny. No.
Yes. So it turns out that Hollywood is actually the gamer tag that is used by Casper Van Dien's wife's son.
Yes.
And they open the door and he is a weedy, small, short kid with a gas tank and an oxygen mask because he has severe asthma, right?
Yeah, that could kill him.
At which point, Cody basically declares this guy dead, doesn't he?
Yeah,
he's like, dude, he's fucking dead. We can't
dying,
take him.
Yeah,
anywhere.
We can't. Yeah, got cancer or something. You know, we can't
it's
have him.
All very garbage.
Yep.
And then I forget. Do we have the unnecessary airport scene first, or do we meet Casper Van Dien's wife first?
We meet Casper Van Dien's wife first, I think.
So Casper Van Dien's wife is played by very good actress Lynn Shay.
Yep.
And to be fair, Lynn Shay is doing the best she can with what is a cringy part. Now, to be fair, it's meant to be cringy, and she makes you cringe.
She
succeeds.
Yep.
She's basically a Las Vegas party girl who hasn't realised that she's now too old to be that.
Yes.
And she's still drinking, doing drugs, acting like she's a 20-year-old bimbo.
Yep, the whole nine yards.
There's a very uncomfortable scene where she tries to kiss Casper Van Dien and he won't kiss her and he kisses her on the head instead.
It's clearly loveless. And I don't understand what that's about. It's never explained why he would stay with her if he's not interested, because he's clearly got all the money.
The only important part from this scene, because god damn it, we need yet another plot thread in this fucking film, is they drop the foreshadowing that Hollywood is not Casper Van Dien's son.
No.
Lynn Shay doesn't remember who his dad... No, she does know who his dad is, but she won't tell anyone.
Because he left her.
Yeah.
He had to pay them out, so she's basically rolling in money.
Yeah.
Because...
His dad was some semi-famous person back in Vegas in her early days.
Yep.
Roughly the 80s. Yeah, we'll get there.
So then we go to the airport where you've got the Black Assassin's kid trying to get on a plane on his own, and the woman behind the counter is like, oh, I'm sorry, but you need a parent or guardian, and he starts pulling
quite rightly, because he's 12 fucking years old.
Yep, and so he pulls the race card. It's like, oh, so I'm being profiled, blah, blah, blah.
You know why this scene's in here, don't you?
No.
Purely so they didn't have to cast a parent for this kid.
Yeah.
And explain how he got to
Germany.
But then
they had to cast an air stewardess and extras.
I know.
So it actually made it worse for them doing
this
scene.
Maybe it was just to pad the runtime.
Maybe it was because it's not quote unquote funny, but it's not funny.
I tell you why this is, and you, as I said in the postal episode, I'm not someone who gets snowflakey or anything like that, but this is actually quite a harmful scene, because in this scene, this kid uses racism.
Would be called the race card.
Yeah, he pulls the racism card when people aren't being racist to get preferential treatment, which is exactly what white conservatives and people who support Donald Trump, what they accuse black people of doing already.
Yep.
So
it's actually quite damaging to that community to have that in here.
I mean, I would assume, what the fuck do I know? I'm a white guy, I don't know.
From England.
Yeah, I'm a white guy in England, I don't know what fucking US
And
is
we're
like.
Not racist at all.
Just go on, tell them what the name of the airline is, because it's fucking atrocious.
I thought you'd like it. The name of the airline is D's Nuts Airways.
D's Nuts.
And then right at the end she goes, thank you for riding D's Nuts. And he goes, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Come on! Come on, you love
the fun.
Giggling away.
I'm giggling because it's fucking embarrassing.
I knew you'd like it.
Tell him
thank you for riding D's Nuts, Jamie.
Tell him the next bit.
So the group arrives at the tournament. A Hollywood's air tank gets trapped in a lift, and so he gets pulled up as the lift is going up, and it starts to throttle him, so the guys have to save him. while we're here, Greg has turned up at the tournament as well, you know, Armour Gregan, and he runs into the referee from the 80s who used to know him. Now, this is actually quite a cool element if you know a bit about gaming tournament history, and which I only really know about because of the documentary King of Kong. Armour Gregan is very much based on a real guy, not 100%, it's inspired by a real man who, he was the self-confessed King of Kong. Oh, I can't remember his name for the life of me right now, but you can look it up, just look up that documentary. And actually, I recommend that documentary because it's really entertaining. But this guy essentially runs his own business, but he's kind of put his whole ego into being this great competition player. And the referee from the 80s recognises him and goes, "Oh, it's you, Greg. Remember me?" And Greg doesn't recognise him because he's too up his own arse. But the referee guy is also a reference to the referee of Twin Galaxies that you will also see if you watch the King of Kong documentary. And it's a reference to the fact that there seemed to be quite a bit of corruption in Twin Galaxies. And if you look into the history of, you know, that whole shtick, there's a documentary called King of Kong which explains the corruption between Twin Galaxies, who were supposed to be holding a legit rankings board, and Mitchell, something Mitchell, not Gary Mitchell.
Peggy Mitchell?
Not Peggy Mitchell. Not
Phil from, Mitchell.
Yeah, Phil Mitchell. It's someone from America, obviously. Not from EastEnders. But that reference doesn't go anywhere. It's just kind of like a nudge, wink, wink, if you know it. And I'll give Blake Freeman that, because it seems like he did at least tertiary amounts of research. So after they arrive, the gang go to a cafe to have a few drinks and chill out and go, "Yeah, we registered, we're all going to do this, guys, great." And that's when Zelda Williams first physically enters, because we've seen her on Skype and we've seen a photo of her, but now we actually see her on screen with the other actors. And that entrance is so poorly edited that it was notable. She just kind of pops in, and the way it's edited, I mean, it's possible that it fits in terms of a timeline and the way she enters, but it doesn't look right and it doesn't click right. It's jarring the way they've edited it. And I think it might be because they broke the rule of degrees with the camera, because I think it cuts from a close-up facing in one direction to a wider shot, but in the same direction with the same pretty much basic framing. It looks like she just snaps in.
Literally all they needed was a shot of her coming through the door.
That would have worked. Armour Gregan gets chatting with the guys, and there's like one of them stereotypical montage sequences of the guys going, "Yeah, let's drink, let's enjoy ourselves, da, da, da," which doesn't last very long. Then we go back for the first round of the tournament, and one of the team names that Jamie noticed,
my God,
was Dharma Victims, as in Jeffrey Dharma.
With a Z, of course.
Dharma Victims. Now, anyone who doesn't know, is it Jeffrey Dharma?
Jeffrey Dharma was a very prolific, very notorious serial killer in the 1980s. Kidnapped, tortured, murdered several gay men. His goal was to create the perfect sex slave. And he used to do this by drilling holes in their heads and pouring bleach in to liquefy their brains. So, as you can imagine, that didn't go well. And then, just the final gruesome detail, when obviously that didn't go well and they died, you live in a New York apartment block. How are you going to get rid of bodies? I tell you what you're going to do. You're going to eat them.
Bleach and all?
Yeah, he ate the bodies.
Oh, yes.
So he got caught. People could smell the cooking.
So considering that's who Jeffrey Dharma is, and there is no other Dharma I can think of that would fit in this context.
And with the word victims, it's clearly a reference to that. But
considering he murdered gay people, and we've got a character whose literal existence in this film is he's gay, doesn't feel right. Doesn't feel right. It feels in really bad taste. Not quite postal level. I don't think anything's going to quite get to postal level, but it's definitely in bad taste. So Rain win their first round. I'm not going to go into all the details of that because, let's be honest, the actual tournaments themselves, they don't really introduce Gears of War 3.
Yeah, the tournament's a throwaway, aren't
they? Yeah, they're just sort of footage slapped in montage style with no tension, no build-up, no intrigue, no interest. It's just kind of like, blah, 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 that'll do, enjoy, whatevs. They're just kind of there to space out other scenes with more important story elements. Afterwards, Jason Mewes goes on a date with Zelda, and the other three go to a strip club.
And just to say, this is one of the other really genuinely funny scenes, is Jason Mewes, when he's preparing for the date, he's talking to himself in the mirror, some of that is actually quite funny.
At least it's ad-lib.
Yeah, yeah. He says something about wanting to work together, and then he's like, no, wait, you're on a different team. Why would we do that?
Yeah. If the rest of the film had been quite funny, that might have been even funnier, because it would have been enjoyable and in an enjoyable film. Unfortunately, that was like a small peak in an otherwise flat movie.
Yeah.
So they go to this strip club. They get let in, even though Hollywood's too young, because he sells them a story that he's dying of something so that the bouncer will let them through. They tip the DJ to allow Hollywood to be called onto stage. So he's got all these hot strippers, like, rolling around him, dancing around him. He's, like, he's got his gas mask on, breathing. Not gas mask, is it? Sorry, oxygen mask. Slightly different connotation. He's got his oxygen mask on, breathing heavily to try and control his asthma while, you know, he's getting aroused by all these girls. And then they call on a special guest called Milkshake.
And, of course, as you can probably guess, Milkshake is a rather hefty lady.
Mm-hmm.
And they do a... To be fair, it's one of the only cinematic moments in the film, to be fair.
It's true.
They introduce her with a pan up from the feet shot.
It might be the only pan in the film.
I say pan, I mean tilt. Apologies. No,
but, you know what I mean? I think it's the only camera motion in the film.
You get a close-up of her heels.
I don't think they move the camera in any other shot. I think it's the only time they do it.
I think you're right. I think that's another reason it felt cheap. Is it's all quite... No. There is a bit where Zelda and Jason Mewes are on their date. There's a bit where they're walking along the street and the camera's tracking with them.
Yeah. I guess.
90% of this film is clearly on a tripod.
It's either tripod or steady, like just being handheld, but in one position.
Yeah. No, I think it is tripod.
While Milkshake is dancing, she accidentally treads on his oxygen line. So he now can't breathe, and he has, like, this asthma attack, collapses on the floor. Now, this is a bit I find genuinely hilarious, though you weren't too keen on it. I did find it funny.
Just because it's an extension of the gay joke.
So here's the thing. I find it funny ignoring the rest of the gay joke. This is the only time that the gay thing is kind of paid off, if you like, but it doesn't really pay off. So Oliver sees that Hollywood has collapsed with this asthma attack on stage. He goes, oh my god, climbs up, straddles Hollywood and starts trying to
chest pump him. He's in the cowgirl position.
Yeah.
On his lap, doing mouth to mouth essentially.
Not mouth to mouth, he's just CPR. Doing CPR. Yeah.
But you notice once he stops the CPR,
he's still bobbing up
and
down.
He's bouncing up and down on the crotch area.
Yeah, shouting everyone going,
ma'am! I gave her attention like a whip. Ma'am! Call 911! Ma'am! Ma'am!
That made me laugh. And then as they wheel him out to the ambulance, the reason that made me laugh isn't because her gay. That made me laugh because of the goat scream. He had like the similar timbre. So it's because of that goat noise sound that he makes. And that's why I think it's Matt Shively who plays Oliver. I think he's the best thing in it.
Yeah.
Because he was able to find the comedy in a moment that otherwise wouldn't have been funny.
Yeah. We're running out of time here. Shall we get to the part where the endings all start cancelling each other out?
Sure. So I'm just going to say there's so many unnecessary scenes. We can pretty much cut most of them anyway. Greg bails on his Frogger final to watch his son.
Right, so this is what you think is going to be the concluding arc of Greg. So Greg, who was clearly set up to be a villain, turns out not to be a villain.
Dad.
And we realise that he's Hollywood's dad. Now, here's the thing. There is never a scene in which Greg is notified about that.
Nope.
Or any scene where it's confirmed.
And there's no reconciliation scene between the two.
It's literally just, you realise that he also has asthma, and you realise that he was basically a man whore in Las Vegas around the time Hollywood would have been conceived.
Yep.
And Cody throws away a line where he goes,
and he's rich.
And he's rich. And Cody throws away a line where he's like, I think I just met Hollywood's dad. And then all of a sudden, there's this scene where they're both like, I hope you win your competition, son. Well, I hope you win yours. And of course, you then get what you think is this nice conclusion to their arc, where Greg realises that winning Frogger isn't the most important thing in his life.
Watching his son compete is more important.
And he surrenders the tournament.
Drops out to watch his son win.
But the thing is,
that arc doesn't get completed because they don't win. Now, you might be thinking, why don't they win?
Well, Zelda's Pixies team are the ones who end up going against Rain in the finals, because of course they did.
But I called it, didn't I?
You called it about half an hour into the show. Yeah. Like, at least, like, as soon as Zelda was mentioned, oh, so she's going to be the finalist. Yeah. Oh, yeah, she is.
Oh, by the way, the Black Assassins are just being gotten rid of at this point.
They're basically just thrown out at some point, and there's, like, one Miffy line from the lead guy, and then he's gone. And it's like, oh, all right, bye then. Jason Mewes throws an easy victory in the final. Yeah. It comes down to the last two teams, the final round, and it's like a tiebreaker. And everyone else is dead. He sneaks up behind Zelda.
Literally could kill her with one melee hit.
And this is where the cinematic angles would have been really helpful, to see that decision pace room, to see the sweat drip down, to make that choice, what should be the right decision. But because it's all shot in a really flat, bland, and unimaginative manner, that's all missing.
Yeah.
So all that happens is it just looks like he gives up for no reason. She turns around and kills him.
And you think, so again, you think this is the nice end to an arc, because he's realised love is more important than the video game.
Yes.
Which really is the lesson that Cody should have been learning, given that this is how he lost his missus.
Yeah, that was his starting story, was that he lost his missus and he needed to refind himself.
Not to read too much into this, obviously, but I'm just kind of trolling here a little bit. Mm-hmm. But bit simpy, isn't it? Letting the girl win, but does she let him win?
No.
When she turns around and murks him.
But here's the question: essentially, the girls would only have won. Like, if the guys had actually put in full effort the whole way, the girls couldn't have won. Which is also not a good storyline.
No.
Even if it's trying to be kind of pro women, it kind of goes against that arc.
Yeah, it's one of those things, isn't it? Where yeah, he lets her win, but she literally does not even hesitate.
She doesn't hesitate. As soon as she sees him, boom, she's dead.
Which, to be fair, actually, now I think about it, maybe the end titles bit do make more sense.
Okay, well, we'll come to that in a sec. So, we've now got the full storyline of their tournament. They've gone up against the Pixies. Jason Mewes has thrown it. Everyone loses. So Greg's story arc is now broken, because Greg's story arc was to leave winning Frogger to watch his son win. That now doesn't happen. However, Greg's storyline is also further broken in the post-credit sequence, where they have, like, still photos with text explaining what happened to the characters
afterwards. They do a sort of where are they now thing, don't they?
Yeah, and it turns out he sold his business so that he can go on the road to really win the Frogger tournament for real, which goes against the whole point where he realised that winning Frogger wasn't the important thing, family was.
Yeah.
So he's thrown away all the money that his son would have needed to go in and compete in Frogger. So his story is like, it's completely broken by the script at that point. Cody's story is completely forgotten, and the only storyline that was left for him was to win the tournament so he wouldn't be a complete loser. Well, he's now lost. So he also loses, and his storyline is completely broken.
Yep.
Nothing really breaks Oliver's storyline. They just do another couple of lol, he might be gay jokes.
Yeah, he sleeps with a bunch of supermodels.
Supermodels, and they're like, oh, but they don't know whether he's gay or not. And it's like, well, I guess no. Like, he slept with supermodels. Like, what are you talking about?
To be fair, Elton John slept with women until he realised he was gay.
As far as the narrative is concerned, it's unnecessary.
Yeah.
The only person who really gets a satisfying conclusion is Hollywood, because he gets to meet his dad. Though he doesn't win, at least he gets to meet his dad.
Yeah.
And then the worst one, actually, I think, for me personally, is Jason Mewes' character, because he spent the whole time pined after Zelda Williams' character since the days of Dreamcast.
Mm.
He's now finally gotten to have this date with her. We've built this wonderfully emotional story between the two. It's actually the only emotional plot thread that follows through the entire film. And then he lets her win. There's no resolution to that. It cuts to this other element where, like, this where are they now?
And they're not together.
They're not together. It says he's now banging Hollywood's mum.
The old lady.
Yeah.
And Zelda's gone off and just bought a house.
Well, Zelda stated in the film that she wanted to buy her parents' house so that they weren't evicted.
Right.
So her story arc actually finished fine, but she wasn't a main character. And you would have thought that, you know, he could have helped, or he could have, you know, there's no reason they couldn't have continued a relationship.
The lesson here, boys, is don't simp.
Exactly, don't simp.
Don't throw games for women.
They give them a possible out, where right at the end, this guy comes up to him and goes, hey, I saw you guys play, you know, I work for Mountain Dew, I'd like to give you a sponsorship from Mountain Dew.
Mm.
And they're like, oh, no, you've got to be screwing with us, man. He's like, no, honestly, I want to give you a manager contract. You know, I think you guys have real talent and real ability. And it ends with them, like, doing this jump up in the air with a really bad freeze frame, because they're all blurred, so it doesn't work as a freeze frame. And then cuts to the where are they now. Well, in the where are they now bit, it turns out that the guy who was selling them the manager contract was a phony. So they didn't even get that.
Yeah, so it's just a mess of an ending.
So that's literally the whole storyline. There's nothing of value in the story. Nothing is really resolved. I think Hollywood's the only one with an actual arc that pays off for him.
No real story is told. No,
and it looks like turd, right? And we noticed this when it got to the end of the credits. Now, we're going to read a list of some names.
There was about 20 names on this list, wasn't there?
I think there was 30, 35.
Wow.
There was a lot of names. We're going to read six of them to give you an idea of just where the budget came from and why this shouldn't have looked as badly low-budget as it was.
To be fair, we're not 100% sure they were given money by these people.
But the credits
said something like...
Credits.
Thanks to the involvement from, or something like that.
Something like that. But they, like, at least six names would say a lot, and the other names were quite big as well, these were the six main ones that stood out to us. Sony Pictures, Microsoft, Skype... PepsiCo, Epic Games, and Apple.
Yep, Square Enix were in there.
Square Enix
as well.
Were in there because they had Tomb Raider posters. Yeah, Pop Chips because they were using
those. I am wondering because I don't think these people can possibly have given them money or else this film would have a higher budget.
Either that or they spent it all on weed or blow or something.
Yeah, I reckon it was more a case of they went to these companies and said, hey, we're making a film about games.
We want to show
an Xbox in it. Can we do that? And you won't sue us. And Microsoft went, yeah, fine.
Yeah, because here's the thing. I'll go over the references quickly. There's not a lot to go through. Because pretty much everything was Gears of War 3, so we can tick that off the list straight away.
Gears of War 3 is all over this movie.
Except for Hollywood was wearing a hat that was Gears of War 2.
Which is the superior game. Gears of War 2 is better than Gears of War 3.
I like both, but I played Gears of War 2 online a lot more, I must say.
I never played any of them online. I'm not an online guy.
Fair enough. So, yeah, Gears of War 3 is shown all over the place. Blood Rain... Actually, I put Blood Rain 2, but it's actually the first Blood Rain. There's posters of the original Blood Rain game in both the game store and in Jason Mewes' apartment.
Yep.
Sonya from Mortal Kombat 2009, there's a standee at the store, but then there's also a Katana standee in Jason Mewes' apartment.
Yeah.
And there's a couple of other Mortal Kombat references around. That's before they got sold to Warner Brothers.
He had a second standee as well.
Yeah, I think he did.
I'm not sure because you only glimpse it.
Mm.
I think may have been Trish from Devil May Cry.
No, I don't think so.
No.
There didn't seem to be any Capcom stuff in there.
She was blonde and had large jugs.
Yeah, that's Sonya. That's the Sonya one. Yeah, that's the 2009 design of her. So she had massive jugs, really low-cut trousers, which are super military. There was also the Tomb Raider reboot. It had posters in Jason Mewes' apartment.
Yeah, Lara Croft, yeah.
And there was one of the Final Fantasies, one of the newer ones, plastered all over the place in both the store and Jason Mewes' apartment. I've already mentioned the reference of you've been obsessed with this chick since the Dreamcast. I don't know why I put reference D's Nuts Airways, but we can never get over that. And then there's some of the old arcade games that were shown at the Frogger tournament. Obviously, there's the Frogger cabinet, there's a Galaga cabinet, there's the Centipede cabinet, and there's one that's out of order, but I can't remember. I couldn't recognise the cabinet design. Someone else would probably recognise it a lot more than I would, because I'm really not that fully au fait with arcade cabinet design of the early 80s. Mm. However, I could recognise those three. Frogger was named. The other two I only caught by the side artwork designs. Yeah, so there's at least four of those. And I think that's pretty much it. What I will say is there's one more reference that's not fully video game related. Cody's number plate on his car reads Smogcast, which is Kevin Smith's podcast network. And that's because Jason Mewes is Jay from Jay and Silent Bob.
Oh.
So, yeah, that's the only other thing that's literally the only IMDb stuff I could find was about the plumbing number plates.
So we've given this quite a negative review. I'm assuming neither of us are recommending it.
No, I couldn't recommend it. However, what I will say, I mean, I've got a German Blu-ray because I'm in Ponce, but this, you can, if you want to view it and you want to give it a try for yourself, not that I would recommend doing so, I actually don't really recommend it. I think some people would get something out of it. At the very least, it's not the worst film in the world. It's just very bland. It's very bland
and badly made.
But if someone's just after like an easy pizza and chill film, it's not that terrible. But if you did want to watch it, as of this recording, it is the full film has been uploaded for free to watch on YouTube by the creators. So you don't have to buy the German Blu-ray in order to watch it, or buy a DVD or anything like that. You can go on YouTube, you can look up Noobs, N-O-O-B-Z, and you'll find that the film is fully watchable on YouTube. So if you do want to give it a test yourself, that's one of the only films that we've come across that you can literally go, yeah, I'll pop that on for free.
Yeah.
So, what would you say for free? Would you recommend it for free?
No.
But
not even for free.
Now, let me read you a little review I found for someone who feels differently from us.
Okay.
This is from the IMDb reviews.
Yep.
This user, name Dad333.
Well, he's going to be cool.
Posted in 2013. Gives this movie 9 out of 10 stars.
It's a solid film.
With the tagline, forget the bad reviews, ...
You know, it's
just two dots.
Obviously a very loved film when the best review for it has to say, forget the bad reviews.
Just two dots, not three, so it's not full ellipsis. This movie was... Movie in capital letters. This movie was absolutely hilarious and entertaining. I almost died laughing a few times whilst watching this.
Has he got the extreme asthma of Hollywood?
I admit I really only looked into this flick because I liked Jason Mewes and followed the Jay and Silent Bob / Kevin Smith flicks. Hmm. I wasn't expecting much after the reviews, but this movie was friggin' hilarious. Being a very occasional gamer, I thought that this movie would be interesting, ... Oh my god, literally, I've just realised that in all of the ellipses, this guy's only put two dots.
So he's putting an ellipsis.
He doesn't know what an ellipsis is.
No, he's putting an ellip.
Yeah. So being a very casual gamer, I thought this movie would be interesting, ... but was put off by the reviews posted, ... but I gave it a chance, ... glad I did. There were moments that I thought I was gonna die laughing. That's the second time he said
that. He wants you to know he almost died.
This man needs to see a doctor.
I think he needs an ambulance more than he needs to write a review.
The whole movie, comma, start to finish, was
comma,
really
backslash,
well...
Semicolon.
The whole movie, comma, start to finish, was really well made, ... and very funny. I think to say... comma.
He's thinking to say. That's what he wanted to get out of that set. I think to say,
if you liked Jay and Silent Bob, you'll like this movie.
You know what? He might have a point there. See, I'm not a fan of Kevin Smith's films in general. There are some that I like, but I'm not a big fan in general because I think you have to be a pothead, really, to get most of his stuff. And that's fair because he himself is a pothead, openly so. I mean, he got arrested in the UK because he brought over weed and didn't realise we hadn't legalised it.
Really?
Yeah, he didn't get arrested fully. He was just like, oh, mate, I honestly didn't know because it's been legalised in America for the most part. So
Legalise
that stuff. I mean, I don't mind legalising it. I'm cool with that. But at the same token...
I'm actually very anti-weed.
Are you?
Mm. Well, okay, they can legalise it if they want, but I don't know why you'd smoke it. It smells fucking disgusting.
All right, well, I mean...
It gives you the munchies.
Yeah, it's better than tobacco, but even then, I'm not a fan of it myself. Anyway, that's not the point. I actually wonder if I could recommend this to people who are fans of Stonehead movies.
No, it doesn't have that vibe. It doesn't have any of the Kevin... I'm not a fan of Kevin Smith either, but I'll admit that every Kevin Smith film is smarter than this. This is just a bad, bland movie.
I will admit that even, like, there's a film of Kevin Smith's I watched which I didn't like, which was, not The Walrus. Was it Walrus?
Yeah, Tusk.
Tusk, that was it.
I actually want to see that one.
Yeah, so, I mean, you might get more out of it than me, because I'm not a fan of body horror, but I have to say, at least the first half of that film, the script was very clever.
Yeah.
I think it let itself down in the second half, but the first half of that script was very clever, and... I couldn't say that about Noobs. It's not that it started off clever and lost its way. It was dumb from start to finish. Yeah. So actually, you might have a point. And there's obviously, Kevin Smith is not a complete dumbass. There's stuff he's written, which again, whether I like it or not, has smarter and more insightful commentary on it. So,
and,
yeah,
and he definitely wouldn't make
he wouldn't
all
make
these
it
gay
bad.
Jokes.
No, I think he'd be a bit wiser. Blake Freeman obviously is not quite so wise.
And that's all
it sounds
wrote.
Like we're slaking off Blake Freeman a lot, but...
Has he done anything else?
I don't know. Maybe we'll catch up to him on another different project. We'll go, oh my god, it's that dude, and we'll be impressed by him. But not in this occasion. I'm afraid Noobs, or Knobs, as the disc states, is not great. And, oh, by the way, the Blu-ray comes with an advertisement, all in German, about Ecstatic wireless headsets, and Ecstatic's headsets were in the film. So there's actually promotion inside my bloody Blu-ray. Product placement. Why is a product placement in my Blu-ray?
She's wearing the headphones and looks like she's having a bloody orgasm.
I know. Well, they're the best headphones ever. She's ecstatic, like the brand.
Da hatten wir so nach den Kalabessen.
Tell me more, Big Daddy. Tell me more.
We'd better stop, because I'm going to get in trouble trying to pronounce German
words. Let's leave that well behind.
Say goodbye to the audience,
Goodbye
Rory.
To the audience. This is a non-recommendee, but if you want to watch it and be bendy, go on YouTube and watch Aroundy. I'm trying to rhyme things and I can't find a single rhyme.
Don't go into a rap career, Rory.
I could do a hibbity hop.
Oh, we have more of these to record, so let's move on.
Let's move on.
Bye, guys.
Love you.
Cyberpunk Studios.